Hello and welcome to the latest Bruin podcast. This week we share Bruin's house view on how the historic appointment of our new PM has influenced the Brexit process and what this might mean for investments. Before we then discuss the strength of global stock markets so far this year and what factors may support or perhaps derail that momentum. But before we get there, please listen first to our very important disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Bruin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Bruin podcast. I'm Ben Gutteridge, new research director here at Bruin Dolphin, and today delighted to welcome, well, I don't know, are you still my boss, Guy, as head of research?
Yes.
Yes, all right, okay, well, let's put that one to bed. Delighted to welcome Guy, my boss and head of research at Bruin Dolphin, to close out the podcast for the next couple of weeks. I think we're going to take a break as some of the important podcast staff take a holiday. And so what we want to cover then is markets, how they performed year to date and what we're expecting as we move into the latter stages of the year. But before that, of course, we've had an historic moment. I'm not just talking about my promotion. I am actually talking about Boris Johnson and his appointment as UK Prime Minister. And so that's where we're going to start. We'll try not to get bogged down in too much Brexit detail. As I said, we want to talk about markets at large. But let's kick off with the all-important question. Is the appointment of Boris Johnson a big market-moving event?
Well, it hasn't been a market-moving event. It was obviously widely foreseen, and most aspects of his appointment, the margin of victory and stuff like that, were kind of within the realms of expectation. So, no, not really. Not a particular market-moving event. The thing that everybody focused on, obviously, is what impact he is now going to have on the Brexit negotiations. And I mean, what you can say isn't different is the fact that he's basically playing the same game as his predecessor. He's playing the same game, which is a game of bluff, essentially wanting a deal, but certainly trying to make it clear that he's prepared not to take a deal. So that's exactly what the former Prime Minister said she was doing as well. Now, with her, there was a lack of perhaps enthusiasm, or certainly a perceived lack of enthusiasm for no deal. And that's where the new Prime Minister, Mr. Johnson, is going to be clearly differentiated. He's really wants to make it very clear that he will countenance and is totally prepared to go for no deal. But they're both when they've played this game, they've both effectively been holding the same set of rather difficult cards to play, and that is having a parliament which meant that no matter how hard they may say they're prepared to countenance no deal, the Premier, the parliament has made it quite clear that it wants to avoid no deal, and so far has been effective in preventing no deal from happening. So that's the challenge that he's got. It's the same game, but a livelier leader, slight change in personnel.
I mean, this is supposed to be an investment podcast, but of course politics is so often relevant. But I sort of don't want to sort of get too tangential on this, but of course when Theresa May was playing the cards, she was a Remainer, and so perhaps, you know, some of the Conservative Party felt at ease sounding Remainee. Now they've got a Brexit Prime Minister. Maybe it serves them well to sound a bit more Brexit-y, and therefore there may be that the makeup of Parliament may all of a sudden look quite different, even though the personnel hasn't changed too much.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he's more enthusiastic about it. He's won a Conservative leadership election, an election of both the party and then of the parliamentary party and of the membership. And he won the membership by roughly 2-1. So he's achieved a very solid victory, and that probably does shift things a bit in terms of making it creating a more unified front for No Deal. But it hasn't changed everybody's opinion by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, there was we had a cabinet resignation even as the result was being announced, and we continue to have Dominic Grieve and a few others really working against this strategy. And the problem is that when we say that the hand that both prime ministers have been holding has been weak, it's been the general opinion of Parliament, but also obviously the fact that neither of them, as it stands, will have a majority to work with when trying to force a very contentious policy like this through. And particularly that makes it very difficult for Mr. Johnson to kind of push through a no deal Brexit.
So we've talked a bit about Brexit there, but let's round out the conversation with outcomes, which presumably are still deal, no deal, or extension. How have those probabilities changed, Guy, and why?
Well, it's a bit complicated, but the possibility of getting a deal has gone up. And the reason it's gone up is because the factor that prevented us from getting a deal historically was that was a lack of commitment to a potential no deal. So because the EU always felt like if they didn't give us a deal, then we would ultimately defer leaving, not leave, there was not a great deal of give, and particularly the give that needed to take place was on the backstop arrangements for Northern Ireland. If the EU really believes that the UK is going to pursue no deal unless it gets a deal, then suddenly the risk to them really goes up quite significantly, because the thing they most want to avoid, the thing that particularly the Irish government most wants to avoid, is a hard border across the island of Ireland, which will give them big economic problems and also imperil the Northern Irish peace process. So if they really believe that that's the alternative to giving a deal, then suddenly that creates much more of an incentive to provide a deal. Now, on the flip side, if you're going to make no deal seem more credible, then you have to keep saying you're prepared to back no deal. And the more you say you're prepared to back no deal, I think it is only logical to imagine that that also means that the chances of no deal go up, because you're just escalating that level of commitment.
And maybe bringing a few MPs along with you. Not loads, but maybe a few that wedding them to that strategy. It's hard to reverse out of that.
Absolutely. And it's become a more coherent Conservative Party policy that has been endorsed by a large share of the MPs themselves and a large share of the membership as well. So that makes it harder for rebels.
So the probability of no deal has gone up, the probability of deal has gone up. So by my maths, the probability of extension has gone down. So is extension now an unlikely outcome?
No, I still think actually that whilst we got the direction right on those previous two, the movement isn't actually hugely significant, because even a greater sense of coherence amongst Conservative Party MPs isn't total coherence. And not only that, but obviously, as everybody knows, they don't have a majority to start off with. Therefore, it's very, very difficult for them really to credibly say that you're going to get a no-deal Brexit if you don't offer some concessions. And the EU has quite reasonably also had the test that they want to see what will go through Parliament before they're prepared to make any concessions. It still seems very difficult to work out how you get a coherent message through Parliament, because all attempts so far have failed. So, you know, unfortunately, and it's far from a benign outcome, still have to say that deferral of some sort seems the most likely event at this stage.
And that's not a particularly bullish outcome for sterling. You'd think a deal is the most positive outcome for sterling, and that no deal at the margin is perhaps would lead to the worst outcome for sterling. Is that sort of the...
I think it's about time frames, because I think failing to deliver Brexit will have serious political repercussions, which may well end up being more negative for sterling in the fullness of time.
Okay, interesting. Well, we'll perhaps explore that one a little bit later. There's some controversy in that, I'm sure. But let's... of course, it's not just about sterling that's going to drive the UK stock market. Global equity performance is going to drive the UK stock market, and global economic performance is going to have some impact on that. So, you know, we know that the fourth quarter of last year was a very difficult year for markets, with some rebound on the back of that. But essentially, 2019 has been a very strong year for the stock market. What is your explanation, and what are expectations, given how fast markets have moved, for the next sort of 12 months or into the year end?
Well, there's always an assumption that economic growth is the thing that drives markets, and that if growth is faster, then markets move faster in the same direction. But it doesn't really quite work out like that. And the last couple of years is a really good example of that. In 2018, pretty good year for growth, but a pretty bad year for markets. And the reason is that it was a year in which policymakers were tightening. They were trying to slow down inflation and fight against inflation. And that naturally was going to have some impact on growth. The impact on growth that markets were anticipating in 2018 has been what we have been living through during the first half, at least, of 2019. But at the same time, whilst growth has been slowing, we've also seen bond yields falling. We've seen pressure on central bank to ease. And so that is where the market is now looking forward to a period of recovering growth, which we think you're already seeing tentative signs of during the middle months of 2019.
So data is starting to improve, but it seemed as though policymakers' decisions was a big swing factor in how markets performed, in that they started to, or were looking to, tighten in 18. Markets didn't really enjoy that. And in 19, they were looking to ease, perhaps on the back of inflationary performance. So are we looking at a benign inflationary environment moving forward, which allows policymakers to stay in easing or easy mode, that would be relatively decent backdrop for markets? Or do you think there's scope for them to tighten, or the need to tighten from here?
Well, there's the need to tighten is seen as a distant possibility by the market at the moment. Certainly based on the data we've got, it doesn't really look like there is a pressing need for higher interest rates. But I think you could see opinions like a change on that front, but probably more towards the end of the year when you start having some more significant base effects. So as it stands, no, it looks like you know that investors are still really looking for a second interest rate cut. That is assuming that they get one this month. And that seems unlikely, I think, given that we're expecting a bit of a recovery in activity. But if they had to shift from expecting a second interest rate cut to starting to expect an interest rate hike, then that probably would be a bit of a headwind for markets.
But it's not our core view at this stage that the Federal Reserve reverse policy anytime soon. Okay, great. Thanks so much for that, Guy. As I said to listeners at the top of the call, we're going to take a couple of weeks break now while some of us go off on holiday, but we will be returning the second half of August, so we I hope you'll tune back in then. But if you are taking a summer break, do have a great holiday, and we look forward to enjoying delivering you more podcasts over the back end of the summer. But until next time, many thanks for listening.